honestly, the way that side of the commercial industry works creates so many broken dreams, broken hearts. And the thing is, what a lot of people have to realize, that if you're a fan and you're just subscribing to your same go-to mainstream media channels and mainstream labels to provide you with your artists, you're actually part of a system where 95% of the artists that you don't see are damaged. There's this whole dark side of disposable humans that I think a lot of mainstream, as I said, music fans don't see.
Hello and welcome to episode 42 of Attention Engineer. And this is my podcast. Hi! Attention Engineer is a show where I seek to make the best use of my own valuable time and attention by having deep conversations with fellow artists about creativity, grit, and determination. My aim is to consistently remind you and remind myself that creativity really is for everyone. It really is. Let's kick that inner critic where it hurts. I'm two-thirds of the way through a much-needed 30-day digital reset. There's nothing quite like an album release campaign to make you want to throw your phone in the bin forever. And if you've listened to this show for a while, you'll know the very name of it comes from my first attempts to wean myself off the bad bits of social media. It's an ongoing process, for sure, but it always surprises me how quickly I start to feel better and how much extra time I find myself having when I do just a few small things to help myself out. I've just started reading a game-changing book called The 12-Week Year, which I highly recommend to anyone who finds their motivation to do things waning throughout the calendar year. And as always, if you're interested in gaining a bit more control over your attention, the book Digital Minimalism and the Deep Questions podcast by Cal Newport are a wonderful place to start. It's exactly the right time for me to be doing this. If you heard my conversation with David Brewis of Field Music recently, episode 38, we talked about the inevitable post-album release slump. I think it happens to all of us to varying degrees, depending on how intense the project is, how long it takes, and the importance we've placed on it. I actually did what I told David I was going to do in that episode and treated myself to some comfy new pajamas to wear on release day last month. I took a few days off, then I braced myself for the expected crash of emotions. But I'm not sure they ever came. What came instead was a serious case of the can't be botherds. Instead of feeling sharply sad or hopeless, I've just been mooching along without any focus or drive. And I think that's okay for a little while. I'm still adjusting to the very sensible decision to make this show fortnightly instead of weekly, which has relieved a lot of self-imposed pressure. But I think the difference between this album release and my previous ones is that over the past year and a half, I've created a very structured creative work life for myself, making things consistently instead of haphazardly. I'm collecting my thoughts about this to share in a more meaningful way in my upcoming YouTube series, so do keep an eye out for that. One of my all-time favourite quotes is by Gustave Flaubert. Be regular and orderly in your life so that you may be violent and original in your work. My other favourite is Inspiration Finds You Working by Picasso. After a couple of weeks of aimlessness, I feel ready to let inspiration find you working again now. So it's my great pleasure to share my conversation with Shingi Shoniwa with you today. Shingi Shoniwa is the legendary frontwoman and bassist from the Noisettes. Dubbed the new Afrofuturist pop goddess by Rolling Stone, her debut solo album Too Bold was released in October 2020 and marks a new chapter of her journey. This sonic odyssey through an effervescent soundscape, fearlessly infused with a soulful yet spontaneous spirit, is a sound inspired by Shingi's London, Bantu, and Zimbabwean heritage. Leading from the heart, Too Bold transports us to a higher vision of the future while acknowledging what it will take for us to get there. The album treads many paths, discussing themes about rising above perplexing times, being resilient, standing your ground, and confronting the struggle, an invitation to keep the optimists alive within us and try to be better in every way. In this conversation, we discuss making music that's a movement, too, the importance of creativity in a happy household, and how music helped Shingi navigate a childhood packed with grief. Stepping off the major label conveyor belt and making music against the odds as an independent artist with integrity. And the detrimental effect of social media and influencer culture on everyday creativity. I had the great fortune to see Noisette supporting Muse on the Black Holes and Revelations tour in 2006 and have been admiring Shingi from afar ever since. So it was wonderful to meet her and have this chat, beaming in from Zimbabwe to Bristol. Here we go. We should definitely get to that. But before we get all of our great conversation out without recording it, please could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Hello, listeners. I am Shingi. And I'm a very creative so-and-so. I make a lot of music and I love inspiring imagery, constantly kind of not like reinventing myself, but evolving myself and making sure that I feel like with every project that I do, I can learn something new from it. And that's what I love doing. And it's a pleasure to be on this podcast with you today, Laura, because you're also someone who I really admire creatively and I look forward to getting into it more.
What? Oh, that's a nice start. Well, thank you. I'd love to start by talking a bit about your latest piece of work, which is your album Too Bold. So it came out in October 2020, which must have been a very tricky time to be releasing new music into the world. Can you talk a bit about that, about the challenges you may have faced during the pandemic releasing a record?
I think, yeah, well, the first challenge was to like actually get it made during the current events, should we just say? I had actually only started like literally 2 or 3 months before it was all announced. I started making the record in like end of November 2020. Well, started writing it end of November 2019. And that was literally only like a few months after the debut solo EP. Although I'm not a big fan of that just nonsensical word solo. I mean, it's something that they tend to... it's a label that is often given to a lot of female artists, and I find it really strange. I think the media are still kind of hungry for those sensational headlines, like, you know, lead singer quits band in a fury of, you know, kind of like, you know, celebrity snobbery, or, you know, there's always, you know, whereas when guys tend to like have a career, it just tends to be like, he's making music with other people, you know, or, whatever, like, you know, Alex from what's it called, Arctics, is making a record with Miles Kane. It's just they're making a record together. Whereas, like, if I make a record with someone else, she's solo. How could she? Dan is in a fury of tears, and I'm just no. It's true, because if you look at even with like so many amazing artists, that female artists, there's a lot of what's her name? Oh my God, her name is just on the tip of my tongue. What's the name of her band? Don't Speak, I Know Just What You're Saying.
Oh, Gwen Stefani.
Yes, it's like, you know, Gwen Stefani went solo, band hate. You know, so there's always these kind of headlines. Mm. Like even with, obviously I know that with people like Tina Turner, it's more complex, but Stevie Nicks, you know, whenever it's a woman, like just continuing to make music, but like to expand, you know, the people that she's making music with, there's always like, you know, like we've been the bitch that's like, you know, dumped the band and, you know, kind of divorced and cheated on. But actually, Laura, Dan is actually on like two or even three tracks of the Ancient Futures EP. And actually Toby from the Noisettes, who's like a brother to me, been making music with Toby for like nearly 10 years now. He's actually playing drums on like, you know, playing music, contributing to about 4 or 5 songs on the album. He's playing drums on like Echoes of You, War Drums, Too Bold, the title track. So me, I'm just the kind of person that like, I don't know, I've just... I love to evolve, I think, as I said before, in my artistry. Mm. And that means stepping outside of your comfort zone and working with other people. What was also important to me was working with more of a diverse group of creators, because when I was making the three records with the Noisettes that I'm really obviously proud that I made, you know, predominantly they were made with guys, and predominantly the producers that we worked with or were available for us to work with at that time for lots of different reasons were white males. You know, it's like it was almost impossible for me to find myself in a room with women songwriters or women producers. You know, that was really important to me, I think. So whether you call that the solo era or the Shingy era of me making music, I'm still very much like quite close with my musical community that I've grown up with through Noisettes. But it just means that I can expand now and you know, on Too Bold, there are three female producers that I'm collaborating with. You know, War Drums is an all-female production with me and an amazing girl called Rozo, Kerry Leatham, and we're playing pretty much everything. I mean, I think Tobbs did a couple of drum passes for us at a studio later on down the line, but it's kind of 90% me and her playing the synths, playing the, you know, just drum loops and machines and just having fun and being able to explore in a way that, I don't know if it's the same for you, but it can be different when you make music with women. For some reason, you know, I did some really, really cool sessions with guys when I was kind of making Ancient Futures in 2019 and starting to write for this, in fact, back in 2018. And I just found that, like, sometimes there's an expectation, especially in the pop world, that your job is to come there, watch them having all the fun with all the synths, watch them jamming. And then when it's like, you know, 8, 9, 10, when you've been in the studio all day and they've got to have all the fun with all the plugins and all the, then you're just supposed to belt out this kind of like fucking pop line about a joke or whatever it is you're supposed to be singing on top of it. And I'm like,
yeah.
It's just not that much fun.
No. And they sit there silently clicking, don't they?
Yeah. And I can see toys in your, I can see your little Fender amp there.
Oh, there's loads of stuff in here. Yeah.
You know, and I feel like when girls to get together, it's a bit like, oh, what's that? Oh, what does that do? Oh, I've got this new, you know, and it's like, not like, right, now I really want you to sort of pour your heart. How are you feeling today? You know, how's that guy you were seeing? And I'm just like, oh. And sometimes it was like that at a Noisette's kind of writing session. You know, especially when you go to somewhere like America and you get on these big pop writing sessions, you know, it's almost like you're there to kind of add the cherry on top, but they're kind of having all the fun.
Yeah, that's not fair. That's not fair at all. I find there's a bit more, I don't know how you feel, but I found there's a bit more kind of empathy and a bit more give and take in a session with another woman. Yeah. And, you know, I've had good collaborations with men too, but
yeah.
I've always felt that it's a bit more prescriptive and, you know, I would be open to the idea that those men were more prescriptive and there must be lots of other men who were great. Yeah. Obviously, there's lots of different people. It's all to do with personalities and experience and stuff. But the amount of times I've been in a vocal booth, sung my bit and then had to stand there for ages while they silently click for ages and fix everything. And then and I'm there going, can I just sing it again? Like, can I be involved in this process in some way?
Yes.
So I have experienced a bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Even little things like, you know, you might just want to like start again and maybe, revisit the song that you're all supposed to be making in another key, like little things like that. Yeah. And then, so I think, they're just very used to, I think, being in male company. And as you said, it is changing and it's getting a lot more exciting. Mm. And, you know, we are evening things out. But I just feel like there's a little bit more room for folly as well. And experimentation when you're working with girls. I feel like girls, maybe we're not afraid to be a bit more goofy sometimes as well. Whereas as you said, like, you know, guys who have been used to having the same role as like Uber producer for 10 years. And, you know, I've written songs for this one. I've produced songs for that one. It's like, but I'm not that one. You know, although I'm a female, I've got a different story to tell, you know, and you need to be in a room with someone you trust. Cause like, the lyrics that I just feel like the poetry that I'm expecting for myself now is not the lyrics that I would have been singing when I was like 16, 17. And I think that's another thing that guys could be maybe a little bit more aware of is that, like, I think when we sometimes approach certain themes lyrically, we can really go in. Do you know what I mean? As girls, right? And it's like, you know, we can't just have your attention when we're singing about themes that you're comfortable with, like, oh, my boyfriend dumped me, or he loves me, he loves me not, or, you know, I fancy him, or I had too much wine and then I said something I should, you know. I feel like they need to be ready for us to sing about other shit as well and like kind of be open to that too, because look how many like when you look at like a lot of the poetry and the spectrum of themes that men have been allowed to sing about in the last kind of 50 years, whether it's, you know, I'm thinking about incredible lyricists like, I don't know, like, you know, Tim Buckley and, you know, Jeff Buckley and, you know, just some really beautiful classics, you know, like Sam Cooke. And whereas when you, you know, as most women that make it, I feel like they are allowed to make it on the condition that they're singing about certain themes that, you know, the men that they're working with at the time are comfortable with them singing about, you know?
Yes.
You know, people aren't used to us singing about stuff like, as you said, you had a group called Something War or like Revolution or like the real dynamics of society or like, I don't know, being in a fight or getting in an argument with someone. Like, these are things that happen to people. We can sing about those things as well. You have amazing lyricists like Lauryn Hill and Nina Simone and like people like Stevie Nicks, that kind of Kate Bush, that get in once every 10 years, you know, like your Grace Jones is, it's not like it's the norm for women to be able to allow to sing about anything.
Well, just any subject that doesn't relate to a heterosexual relationship would make some people feel uncomfortable.
Exactly.
But it doesn't have to be about a relationship at all, but just anything that's, I'm not defined by the relationship I'm in every aspect. So every song I write doesn't have to be about something in relation to a man, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like a lot of the women that are allowed to go through, it's like, you know, when you look at your kind of Adeles and your kind of Palomas, it's kind of like, it feels like the women that are allowed to get through, the number ones are always about, we could have done this and we could have done that. And, you know, we were together. And I'm just like, I'm sitting here picking daisies going, I just want to hear a woman roar.
Yes.
I want to feel my girls roar in the way that they are allowed to roar in hip hop, in grime, in rock and roll, in punk, etc., in folk. I want to hear us roar.
Yeah.
Like, considering what we go through as women, the dynamic of emotions every month, I feel like a lot of us are just almost like code switching to the point of when we're on stage where this like lovely person that the world understands because the worst thing that happened to us was a boy. But then in our female company, we have conversations like this. And I'm like, girl, why aren't you not putting that pen to paper in the studio?
Yes, exactly.
Too much.
I get very frustrated when I feel like it's a wasted opportunity when someone spends any time writing a song and it's just about the same old shit. I understand if you're just starting out, you're going to sort of dig deeper and deeper as you go along.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we make several albums and more albums and, you know, think about a lifetime's worth of albums ahead of us, then you're digging deeper. It's like you're leveling up, leveling down. I'm not sure what my analogy is, but like getting to know yourself again and again and again through writing. That's what I'm doing. So I'm on my fifth album now. And it's vastly different. Thank you. Vastly different subject matter than the first one. Not that the first one is bad or boring or anything. It's just where I was then. Mm. But you would hope though that 10 years on, the album would be more interesting. And yet some people will always just go, oh, what a lovely song. Do you ever get that? What a lovely song. And people mean so well.
Is that a compliment?
I think they mean it as a compliment. But then I think I rage at that. You know, that's a song I wrote on my last album about someone who took their own life, who I knew. Lovely song, someone said.
Wow.
I don't think you've listened to that.
Wow.
I can't take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
You know, or a song about, I don't know, whatever dark themes. Yeah. Lovely. Oh, lovely.
But the thing is, the world is going through super dynamic and arguably dark times at the moment. So, you know, to think that like women are still getting signed to major labels on the basis of A, their looks, you know, perceived kind of mainstream beauty, that for me just feels like it just mentally just doesn't feel right. I just feel like music, we can allow music to reflect the times a bit now, because as you said, not only is it a wasted opportunity for music lovers, but also a lot of people have only got music to get them through. They can't go out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's been lockdown. Like you said, mental health levels are super high. I know four people that have taken their own lives in the last 2 years.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, as well, you know. And so I'm just like, Does it help for people who are really going through things to switch on the radio and hear artists who are completely oblivious to how they feel? Like, does, I don't know. I'm not trying to say that, you know, we should prescribe anyone what to write about, but it just feels a bit strange that, you know, people are still waiting for that next hit about the club when the club is closed. Who are you talking about? The club's closed. You can sing about anything you want now.
Yeah. I mean, escapism is important too, so I will allow that, of course. And but also, you can choose to listen to whatever you want at any time now. So there's no one stopping you from having escapism.
Yeah, yeah. We've got so many amazing songs and, you know, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting time. And I think what you're finding now is that actually, because independence is a rising thing, like you've got your own label, which is amazing, same as me, we are in a position to write songs with different groups of people, different in a different way, different producers from different backgrounds, different musicians from different backgrounds. And I feel like that is the future. Like there's some really beautiful, not just collaborations happening, but in the process, you know, as you said. And I think that's where the change and the excitement is really happening for me.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel that any time with you in a studio would ever be wasted. So it's so brilliant to hear all of this stuff coming together.
We would have a lot of fun. I can just tell by looking at the bits and bobs already. Like,
oh yeah, come round when it's possible. You should just pop round. There's loads of toys in here. I think we'd have a great time.
I would love to have a jam. Seriously, I'm all about it. I carry my guitar everywhere, even if I end up playing it once or twice in that week of traveling wherever I've schlepped it to.
I'm
always happy because I'm like, oh, actually, I'm so glad I brought it, because then I just had this one moment of inspiration and maybe played for like a couple of hours and then didn't play anything for a couple of weeks, you know. So
what do you say when people go, give us a tune, love?
Give us a tune.
When you're walking around with your guitar. Does that happen to you?
Yeah, that happens all the time, especially at airports.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to sing for us on the plane, are you?
As if that's why you brought it.
And you've got to be careful what you say, because if you agree, then they'll be like, all right, so, you know, are you famous? And then if you do say who you are, then they start singing your song to you, and then they start expecting you to break out the guitar. Right. So you've almost got to sort of be like, oh no, I'm just carrying it around because I might get inspired or something.
I'm carrying it around for a boy.
Yeah, exactly. For a boy that I might meet on the beach. We might fall in love.
And then he can write a song about me. Yeah. It'll be great. When I first was in London, years and years and years ago, and I was carrying a guitar around, honestly, people would either say, give us a tune, love, and I found that a bit irritating, to be honest, because it was all the time. Or they'd say, are you carrying that for your boyfriend? Just be like, what?
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, right. So I just schlep it around for him. Am I a fucking pack horse now? Yeah,
serenade.
Unable to play.
Oh.
Yeah, weird.
But I think we are going into a really exciting time now, because also what I've found in lockdown is so many people are kind of like just getting a few basics in and being like, do you know what? I'm going to express myself. And I think a bit like your podcast with like just how creativity is important, you don't always have to be like a professional musician to enjoy the joy of music. I just feel like I've actually met a lot of people in lockdown that have been at home that like, actually, I've re-picked up this instrument that I haven't played since secondary school, or I've picked up the flute again, or I've picked up the guitar again. And you're like, oh my God, you're amazing. Or like, you know, there was a girl who I met on Instagram, and then she sent me a couple of songs, and I was like, oh my God, she's freaking incredible. Like, you know, and I think that, you know, it's something that maybe before pop music, the intersection of pop music and social media kind of in the last 7 years kind of got, I think, creativity on this kind of hyper sort of level. I feel like before, music was something that a lot more people were able to appreciate, and you didn't have to be a professional musician to do that. Like you could go around to someone's house and, you know, have a jam, or they'd, you know, like one in every three households would probably have a musical instrument at home. So I think that's been good about lockdown. It's brought out, you know, the sort of, amateur creatives are just like, it's just really nice. I think that's important. You know, I think a household with some sort of creativity in it tends to be a happier household, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's not about having an Instagram following for the thing you make. It's about making the thing. It always should be about making the thing first anyway. Mm-hmm. And even people who want to do this as a career get so caught up in these numbers, but we're humans. We can't really relate to numbers without context.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so what? 72 people like a thing. That doesn't mean you're 72 points better than you were if you hadn't put the picture up. It doesn't make any difference to you. So it's like we need to disassociate ourselves from those numbers, I think. And again, people who aren't doing it for a career still can make stuff, and you don't have to take a picture of it and put it on Facebook for it to exist, because it exists because you did it. No one ever needs to see the thing. So it's about finding that joy, I think, and like trying to figure out what it is that gives you that, I don't know, peace or that meditative state, or, you know, some kind of feeling that, oh, I exist, I made something, I contributed something to something. I think that's really important.
It is.
So I'm all about trying to tell people that at the moment, to be honest.
Definitely. I mean, sometimes it's like you'll hear a song that someone's just, you know, written for like their flatmate's birthday or something, and you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I could have written something like that, and I'm a professional musician.
Yeah.
So yeah, right. Sometimes I think it's nice to just think about why we're doing it, and only something that has not been, I think, as progressive for music is the fact that, you know, you have had this sharp rise in, you know, influencers that have been signed as musicians, you know, models that have been signed because they like singing, and that's all cool. But, you know, because they've got, as you said, X amount of followers on their Instagram. I did a session once for a writing session for a model. She was a Victoria's Secret model, and she had like, you know, over a million followers on her Instagram, and she just got a deal because of the numbers. And I didn't really look into that, so I didn't even know. But when I got to the session, which I thought was going to be very creative, you know, there was, again, there was, you know, three guys or four guys around her. And I was kind of brought in to kind of, you know, address the gender imbalance, probably in hindsight.
Yeah,
she was a really big fan of my music and Noisettes, and I think somehow Dan had been part of this writing session as well. And so I went in, and it was just like the questions they were asking. I was so like, "What kind of music? What kind of song do you want to make today? Or what do you like?" I don't know. I really like that song. Oh, can I? I really like that song. Can we make a song like that? And I'm just like, wow. I mean, I can't create a song that's based on someone else's creativity just because you like it as a hobby and try to teach you to sing like this person and like emulate the tone of another singer who's been through God knows whatever else, what to cultivate this tone. And you just get basically fast tracked. You know, I kind of left the session feeling a bit like, oh no, was that me doing a good thing? You know?
I see what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like, is that something that I feel that I should be telling up and coming women in? Like, it doesn't matter if you have a voice or not. It doesn't matter if you're ready to do the work and be a musician or not. As long as you like music, you're a fan, and you've got a favorite singer, and you've got a million followers or 100,000 followers or 10,000 followers, we can make you. And again, the song ended up being about a boy.
A valid contribution to the world.
Yeah, and the thing is, I left there thinking, okay, it wasn't as enjoyable because there wasn't that much creativity in the session. It was very prescribed, and she knew what genres she wanted to do, and it was just a bit like, wow, so what was the point of me going through all of that, like 10 years, as you said, schlepping, if now, and I did worry, but I mean, that was about 5 years ago when I think it was just like everybody and their dog and cat and PE teacher was being signed as long as they had a guitar and a good following and a nice face.
Right. Okay.
Whatever nice face.
I missed that moment. Damn it.
Yeah, and whatever that means, nice face.
So, so weird, isn't
you
it?
You can't see
so
someone's weird face on the radio. Like,
no.
Yes,
no.
For radio, they used to call it. So, yeah, that was
it's bonkers.
And that made me think about what you said. Sometimes it's like, it's about the intention of why we do it that actually can maybe subconsciously inform the quality of the music that we make. If you're making it from your heart for your flatmate who you love, it's her birthday, or it's a song for your daughter or your mom or your nan or your friend, or just because you want to just scream because you've had a shit day at work and your boss is being a dickhead and you know, you're turning up the hole and you're turning up your Marshall lamp to like 11 or whatever, you know, that for me is like, that's real expression. Mm-hmm. And we almost kind of, I think, risked losing that at mainstream radio when everybody sort of started signing like influencers and everything was just so about genre and about followers and this, that, and the other. But you know what's great about this time is we're coming out of that. Because like when you asked me about what it was like to not only put the album out during the, you know, I don't want to say the P word because I don't want to give it too much power, but current events.
Yes.
But yeah, like everyone was like, oh, you know, a lot of people were like, no, you're crazy. Why do you want to put out a record now? You know, it's like people can't go to gigs. There's lockdown. You can't do that. You know, da, 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 da. And I was like, because 80% of people are at home now. And I bet you any money, people are going to need music that is emotive and that's coming out of the side of, there was just like a real, I just felt a real blandness in the mainstream radio. Sort of, well, from the Brexit vote, from 2015, honestly, to 2020, it just felt like there was a decline in creativity at television. Everything was dominated by your, you know, Britain's Got whatever, X Max Factor singing competitions, whatever. Do you know what I mean? That was that was, that sort of had captured the kind of, you know, your average English person next door, whatever, British person, British household, whatever that means. And I felt like as soon as, you know, a lot of this, not just uncertainty crept in because of, you know, because of the virus and stuff, but also there was just this whole surge in people experiencing grief and like real emotional kind of, you know, turmoil. And, you know, apparently we've lost more people because of this than World War II, which is amazing, which is just, the numbers are crazy. Like what, 100 and we're probably going to be on a quarter of a million, you know. It's like if we're on 170,000 people have died. I mean, by the time my album came out, Too Bold, in sort of October, November, we were already on like 70, 80,000 deaths. And they were saying that was like just the same amount of people that we lost. But what it also did, it created this kind of, I think, a sense of kind of compassion and empathy on a national scale that I didn't feel I'd witnessed, you know, in the media a long time. Maybe not since like when we were in, I don't know, maybe there hasn't been that feeling since, I mean, I don't know about the Gulf. We were, I was like five or whatever when that happened, but you know, so I felt like where there is mass kind of, you know, grief, and when there are things like, you know, the, all the conversations that were ignited that were long overdue, you know, around like Black Lives Matter and equality and just global oppression and what that looks like and where we are and where we want to go. That's the perfect backdrop for, I think, a real soundtracks to emerge, you know. And so we actually found that, you know, the record has been growing organically for the last five months, but it's been doing really well. It's like, you know, to have, I don't know, like up coming on to like 3 million, you know, streams of an album. Like that's something that people on a major label struggle to do right now. So it made me think that actually, you know, the kind of work that you're doing and the podcasts and like just the kind of quality that you're putting into the work. I think anybody who is really thinking on a sort of and feeling and expressing themselves on an authentic level, and they've got, I don't know, just like good intentions, I feel like you have a really good audience right now.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm going to keep taking compliments from you because it's very nice. Yeah. I just sit here in my little room wondering if there's any point. I think yesterday I spent a lot of time talking to my husband about like, what's the point of what I do anyway? What's the value in any of it? Just having one of those really down days, really super down. But, you know, we all get them. It doesn't define me, but I had one of those days. And then I was like, well, you know, get to talk to Shingy tomorrow. That's pretty cool. Woo! Like, she wouldn't, hopefully wouldn't be saying yes to any old bollocks. So thank you for coming on and being my guest. No and worries. For saying nice things and for making me believe that the thing I'm doing is worth it, because I do think it is. Of course I do think it is.
It's
but sometimes we just get down.
We do, yeah, definitely. And you know, we're still quite a sort of minority in terms of the playing field, but I feel like we are a minority that are growing because of our integrity. And by us, I mean the independent people that are making music, also like not only against the odds, but like without like these huge, you know, teams and budgets and all that kind of stuff. I mean, even just like the independent sector, it's a David and Goliath scene for us.
Definitely.
But we've got that, you know, we've got that catapult firmly. We don't want to like take anyone's eye out with it, but you know.
No.
Yeah, we'll use it. We might don't force us. Don't make us use
it. Don't mess.
We're allies at the moment, you know, and I think it's really important that people in the independent sectors creatively across the board continue to amplify and support each other, because we seem to be making a real impact. When you look at like even like you know, the way that the charts have just suddenly been changing in the last year, because even when you look at the charts, they're not necessarily reflecting the independent sector, because they're realizing that like vinyl is going up, people are buying music from the likes of yourself and myself without that aggressive marketing positioning of the mainstream.
Yeah. Well, that stuff doesn't necessarily work. So I'm interested to know how you've been experiencing it, because as you say, the album's been growing, approaching 3 million streams and stuff. That kind of success doesn't necessarily come when you're signed to someone, because actually those people, and I'm not completely dismissive of anyone, but in my experience and the things I've heard about from people who are on those labels and the success stories I see from independent artists, so I would count myself as one of those, yourself and various others, is that those people don't necessarily know what they're doing. They don't know how to do great Facebook ads. They don't know how to engage properly with an audience in an authentic and ongoing way. They don't know how to build up email lists. They don't know how to do those things.
Yeah.
And so I have had an email list for 12 years or something. There are people on there I've written to every month for that long who want to hear from me. That's amazing.
Oh, that's
to
beautiful.
Me. But I wouldn't get that if I just, you know, especially, you know, if I signed away, what is it, 80% of my earnings to someone else. I wouldn't even get that same return. I wouldn't get that same connection and stuff. So there's a lot of benefits to doing it this way.
But you might not know who your fans are, because what you're doing is you're sharing a generic pool of whoever the Sony fans are, who are kind of, I think what you're now seeing is this incredible fork in the road where you're beginning to see wheat from the chaff. Sounds really rude, but what I mean is there are a lot of us who have just been so busy that like they don't really necessarily invest in artists. They just want a certain type of music with a certain kind of BPM to listen to after work or blah, blah, blah. And they almost kind of like don't care who it is. They just, sometimes I've seen people put in, I just want female vocal, you know, house, 90s, you know what I mean? And it's just like, right. So the mainstream labels have the monopoly of those kind of like, not you don't only create a generic audience by doing that, but you also create a generic type of artist who has no, who doesn't really have the ability to connect with the individuals, as you said, like in the way that you do. And I just kind of feel like what you're now seeing during like the whole kind of pandemic and the rise of independent artists and creative communities is that they've got the ability to retain, you know, their fans and be on a journey with their fans. But they've also got this kind of like, people are invested in you. Like even if you made a jazz record next week, Laura, do you know what I mean? Even if you made a more of a DIY record that was inspired by your time walking in some mountains somewhere in Wales and you met some amazing folk musicians and then you got some electronic situations out and you did something folk, like they're invested in the lyrics that you want to tell to that story. They're invested in you. Whereas like, you know, a lot of the people that are kind of like just subscribed to, you know, the mainstream, they're just expected to be dished. And the thing is, what they don't realize to sort of point out the dark side of that is that I know what it's like to be threatened with this like disposability, because I was the only black female that was signed to to the mainstream label I was on at the time in England. That's I was, and also there were only two females signed to the label. You know, I think at some point they had like Kanye, they had Hudson, they had so many freaking bands, and it was just like me and like Pixie Lott were like the only females on the label.
Wow.
Little things like, you know, I wouldn't get the same, I wouldn't get anywhere near as a marketing spend, for example, as she would get. I would even be told stuff like, well, Shinny's not exactly the girl next door, is she? So, you know, we don't really have to invest. Let's just see if it, we'll chuck the wet tissue on the ceiling and see if it fucking sticks. Literally that kind of like marketing.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And so what you end up feeling like is that there's been a lot of money being spent on like, let's say 50 people. And then out of those 50, five of them are going to get the VIP treatment and everyone else is on the conveyor belt. And if somehow you break through and people remember you, then it's down to luck. It's not down to luck. You know what I'm saying? So I was kind of like, I actually thank them for putting me in that situation because it means I had to be amazing. I had to be the best I could be. Like I had to be, never forget you was no joke. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I had to leave a lasting impact and like just try to make sure that I would be remembered for my creativity and generosity of like creative spirit to the fans. I had to talk like, you know, I mean, God bless her heart. Maybe that's not what she was into doing gigs, but you know, I'm pretty sure maybe I saw Pixie maybe having to do 5% of the gigs that I had to go. I was on the road, like maybe 200-300 shows a year. Whereas my label mates would be like, oh yeah, don't really fancy doing a gig. Going to go to the pub. Maybe I'm not going to play at the festival. Maybe I'm just going to be in the VIP. I didn't have that luxury.
No, of course not.
You know.
So, oh my God.
Yeah. So I think.
I knew it couldn't have been a picnic, but you know, the actual specifics are still shocking to
me. Oh my God. Yeah.
The people are so.
Honestly, the way that like, you know, that side of the commercial industry works creates so many broken dreams, broken hearts. And the thing is, what a lot of people have to realize is that if you're a fan and you're just subscribing to your same go-to mainstream media channels and mainstream labels to provide you with your artists, you're actually part of a system where 95% of the artists that you don't see are damaged. They're, you know, they're taking their own lives. They're dying of drug overdoses. They're, you know, wrapped up in with a group of people that often don't care about them because a lot of the management teams are in bed with the label. So there's this whole dark side of disposable humans that I think a lot of mainstream, as I said, music fans don't see.
Yeah.
Can anybody listening to this podcast name, you know, let's say 10 or 15 female artists that have had careers? Like that they can name more than one or two songs in the last 20 years. No, but they can definitely name quite a lot of white males. What do you think's happened to all those females? Where do you think they are now?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it doesn't seem right to me that the management teams and the labels and stuff, the people who work there, they have lifelong careers, seemingly.
They do.
When a music project doesn't work out, it feels like a breakup at the very least. Let alone, you know, if it's, you know, really bad, or if you did really well and then really bad, or if you never made any money, but you were famous. What the fuck are you supposed to do after that?
Yeah. But then that's why, I mean, sometimes I think it's a little bit of a, it's a bit of a cycle that we can't just expect the perpetrators. Let's say that the system, the way it's set up, the format, you can't always blame the format, because sometimes there are some of us outside there that say, yeah, we're music lovers, but actually we are just on all of these, as you said, like big email lists, and we want the next, like, you know, there's a lot of people who are just like, yeah, now I want the next Katy Perry. I want the next Adele. I want another Anne-Marie. I want the next, you know, kind of like, you know, lovely girl next door belter. You know, if you're expecting that, then you're not thinking, I think, as like these musicians, as like people with dreams, in the way that people used to look up to artists. Like people used to look up to your, like your Whitneys and your, you know, follow certain bands and really, I think, invest in them for their careers, no matter where they went. Like, your Nana Cherries, or it's almost impossible for the state of the mainstream music format to create a kind of star, should I call it, you know, a star that, like, you will be able to check out her music in 5 years and she'll still look, you know, in one piece and happy, you know, because the moment, even when she starts not looking, you know, as sexy and as hot as she did when you first started being a fan in uni, like, you know, if you then get into your late 20s and your early 30s and then you actually disassociate from who was apparently your favorite singer when you were 21, because, you know, it's like, come on, we've all got a role to play in, like, the dark side of celebrity cult of, you know, cult of personality, star worship, you know, and in fact, that's not about music.
No. I wonder sometimes if people, and even I'm talking about even the good people who come along to shows that are small, who buy things at the merch and all that, I just think they assume that if you're on stage, you're getting paid loads of money and you're fine. Honestly, because I don't think these people are the evil ones. They're the great ones. They're the ones who show up. They're the ones who buy things. They're the ones who are members of my membership club and all that.
Yeah.
But they don't know. They don't know that, you know, one of my favourite bands said I could support them, but only for no money, and I'd have to pay their sound engineer £30 for him to stand near the desk. They don't know that.
Yeah.
But then I chose to say yes to that opportunity. I saw that as an opportunity and I did it. I would never do that again, but I did it.
Absolutely.
So we all live and learn, but I think that there's a, I just think there's an element that people just think we're fine. We must be fine because we're doing music.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So we must be well off or something.
Definitely, yeah, no, so I'm just going to get a little bit more light. I want to just stop on my... 1 minute, Laura, sorry.
No, it's okay.
But I think the good thing about that level of, like music fanship is that now we can start to do that on, like, a bigger scale, you know? Like, like Bandcamp, I suppose, is quite similar to kind of attracting, like, that real kind of fan for life, that person who's invested in music and also is not following you because they just need to fill that gap in. Oh, what female artists am I supposed to like these days? Who's fashionable to like? What's her name? Kelly, what's her? Do you know what I mean? So it's actually, it can be really in our favour, but we have to... I think, like, all of, you know, that level of the, like, the grassroots level, we can actually amplify that by supporting each other. And you know, that's what, I think we're in a good, we're in a better place than somebody, sadly, that's kind of stuck on this conveyor belt of broken dreams, as I call it, for their turn.
I have absolutely no desire to be on that conveyor belt of broken dreams. I have no desire to get 18% of my earnings after my 18% has earned back all of the money that's been spent, that's been decided upon by some random person who doesn't know how to do marketing. So I'm good, and I absolutely agree with you. Let's talk a bit more about your record, though, because it is fucking great. You talked about roaring earlier, wanting to hear women roar, and you absolutely do that on this record, and it's so powerful. Almost brings me to tears every time, every other time perhaps, in Too Bold, when you really let it all out. It's amazing.
Thank you.
That's all right. But I just think that the album, it feels like a movement as well as a collection of songs. I mean, it feels like it could be one of those really big life-changing albums for people. You know, those albums from your childhood or from teen years where you're just like, I feel seen, I feel heard, there's something in this for me. You know, and obviously I've had a very different journey to you, as, you know, we've all had very different journeys. There's so much on that album that speaks to me, which feels like, it feels like a very generous thing you're doing, because you're being very, very truthful and very direct, but it seems to be because you want that to benefit others.
Definitely.
And I wonder if that was intentional.
That's completely my intention. And also because, like, I just felt like I was really lucky to be, even though there's, you know, as we said, like a global, crazy, insecure time, I was like, but even though I have the least resources I've ever had in my life, I have also, I'm the most free at the moment. I'm the most independent. I've got a little label and, you know, I can actually, I had to also say to myself, this is the chance when I can roar, because, you know, on previous albums, that would all have to be, you know, kind of a lot of metaphor, you know, there was roaring, but, you know, there was a lot of wordplay. So, you know, only kind of those who really kind of went into the album Decode would know what I meant on that song and blah, 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 blah. So it was very intentional. And I just feel like my heart just filled up with, so much so much love and so much empathy as well, when I felt like the world was really finally having these honest conversations that I feel like I've been trying to sort of have with people for a long time, but they weren't ready. So I felt like before I made this album, I wasn't really wholly seen. I wasn't really wholly heard. People didn't really know my story. And I felt, again, like I was very much seen as an entertainer. And again, it's partly to do with having been on that insecure place of being in a major label and not knowing when you're going to be dumped or when your support is going to be taken away from you and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted people to feel, to get a sense of what I've overcome and like how I just felt really inspired by the stories that people were sharing. Like, especially like as we were obviously locked down, you know, like I said, I started making the album in November, but that was just writing it. And we actually were recording it in January. And then we started doing promo already in like...
That's really fast.
Literally, it just poured out on me, babe. It just poured out, yeah. But also when I moved to my mum's, certain things like the riff on the guitar from Too Bold, it just came to me again one night, and it ended up being one of the last additions on the album, because I remember that was like, so I was in my mum's, right? All me and my siblings moved back to my mum's, and so all of our old stuff is there, like, you know, my guitar that I bought when I was 16 and saved up for from a little music shop in Lewisham was there, and I picked it up. And I don't know if you have, like, if there's an instrument that you haven't picked up for a while, when you pick it up, the last song that you kind of wrote is still on the fretboard. Like, it's still like...
I love that idea.
Yeah, so I picked up this red Westone amazing like guitar that I had from when I was 16. And dun dun ba dun bum 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 dun da dun 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 da dun bum ba dun bum 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 dun bum ba dun 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 da 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 like 17-year-old Shin just came back through the guitar. And I realized that was a song that I never finished, that I actually started writing when I was about 17. And I think it popped up. I think it tried to audition itself for one of the Noisette's records. It was like too melancholy or something. It never quite ended up making the record. So I was like, wow, maybe this is the time when I'm not on the road and I'm not on this go, go, go mode. And, you know, like I said, like we're independent now, so we can tell the stories we want to tell. And there's the song just literally happened in about 3 or 4 hours. And so...
Love it when that happens.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, so I feel like the creative generosity, that's not what it felt like at the time. It felt like... It felt more like an emotional generosity that was needed, because I was just reflecting the incredible conversations that were happening on like social media with just so many amazing forums like Black Lives Matter. You know, so many friends of mine had lost loved ones and they didn't know how to file that.
Yeah.
You know, and my childhood was literally like so like the grief was like an onslaught. You know, it started with my dad when I was 9. And then by the time I was 15, all my grandparents had passed away. And we had a really, really devastating moment in Bantu Africa. So a lot of the East and Southern African countries were devastated by this AIDS, HIV situation. And so, you know, if you were a child with heritage from any of those places, be it Kenya, Malawi, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Congo, Zambia, Namibia, Botswana, you know, Cameroon, Tanzania, you know, Mozambique, Lesotho, Eswatini, if you had family from any of those places, people were dropping like flies. You know, and actually that's how I came into doing music, because I think I was just like, I could have gone into the traumatized child direction, or I realized with me and my siblings, okay, we, you know, by the time I was 10, 11, it was like we were going to funerals every weekend. So we just had to become the entertainment. You know, it was like,
right.
You know, after those funerals, funerals are often as well in Bantu culture, a celebration of life. So I grew up around a lot of live music consequently because of this. So, you know, you have like your traditional musicians turn up at the house if you've lost the loved ones, and they're playing these instruments that, you know, you would really only find in your, like, you know, homestead in whichever African country you're from. So I grew up realizing that music and creativity was so powerful, and I was given a lot of generosity and help in my grief by growing up with a very creative family. So my mum's brother's a drummer. My mum's cousin was one of the most legendary sax players who played with like Hugh Masekela and all these people. My uncle Thomas Mofomo was is a legendary musician who also inspired my playful style of kind of guitar picking, because it comes from this thumb piano culture. So the way you play guitar is definitely a lot slightly kind of different. And so, yeah, when I was growing up, like, creativity helped me to process, you know, difficult times, hard times, you know. Hard times, yeah. I'll be seeing it all before. Hard times, yeah, not running anymore. Pick yourself up off the floor. Somebody did that to me when I was a little shit. And so all I wanted to do when I was finally in a position to do that, and there was just this wild outpouring of upsetness and grief and, you know, people realizing that, you know, and having to, you know, recognize uncomfortable truths, like the level of oppression that existed. I was like, oh my God, I know how to write music for this. This is actually great. Yes. Quite easy for me, because when I was a kid, I had my go-to musicians and family members who would help to soothe us as kids. So it's kind of like something that I was lucky to be exposed to culturally. So it didn't feel like a creative generosity. It felt like a duty. I was like, oh, well, oh my God, I know how to deal with that. You know, two of my best friends lost their mums. Another best friend lost their father. I remember going to a funeral in May, June, and it was like one of my best friends, and she was like a huge kind of like really loved lady in the community, and their family's from Eritrea, but you know, they're kind of born, most of the kids are born and raised here, and like they have like big functions, like when they mourn their dead, or when they celebrate the lives of someone that's going to meet the ancestors, you're talking hundreds of people. And I remember going to the funeral, and you know, it was up somewhere by Highgate Cemetery somewhere. It was really beautiful. But there was like 8 people.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like, so yeah, I just remember thinking now, like the stuff that I've not wanted to talk about with people for the last kind of 25 years, everyone's talking about it now. And so I was like, okay, let me be brave enough and bold enough to write about it. And then what happened was, echoes of Little Xing came back when I was at my mum's house, because then my mum started telling me and my siblings, like, because my siblings are artists as well. My brother Quay is an amazing artist, and my sister Chipo. So there's a song called Tsitsi where we all sing in our mother tongue together for the first time. And that basically means it's a call out to the ancestors, like, we're doing our best, but we need your help right now. Like, please show us the way. Like, we've done everything we can. We try to live good lives, but like, there's still something that makes us unhappy. Please help us, you know? So I kind of realized that when I went back to live in the family home, and I realized a lot of my friends went through this. A lot of my friends went to, you know, back to the home counties and left their flats in, you know, Clapham's and London's and Dalston's and blah, blah, blahs. And, you know, I was having these crazy, you know, everyone was being added to all these WhatsApp groups. But then I just realized how much I detest my sister. I just realized that, you know, I'm, you know, my dad's not my dad. Like, everything was coming out. I don't know, similar in your community, but I feel like 2020 was a very revealing year emotionally for people because of the pandemic. So I was like, okay, I've got nothing to lose. As long as it's coming from a place of love, and it's not going to leave people feeling sad and drained, it's going to leave people feeling like actually creatively can help us through this moment in time together.
Yeah. Well, it's an incredible journey you're taking people on. And I think I didn't leave it feeling like, oh, everything's terrible. I just felt like she's giving so much and this is incredible. And it's so avant-garde, like the production. Now, I will say, like, my knowledge of modern pop production is fucking zero. So maybe it's not as avant-garde as I think. I mean that as the hugest compliment, by the way.
It's what you do with it that makes it avant-garde, you know?
Yeah. But that's why I was wondering about, like, I'm very impressed it was made so quickly anyway, but I'm very impressed it was made so quickly because it's really fucking complex. There's a lot of shit going on. Mm. So well done. Basically, that's I don't have a question about it, just well done, because it's really an amazing piece of work.
Thanks, Laura. No, thank you. It means a lot. And again, I think it's just, it really is a testimony to, I think, also me stepping out of my comfort zone and just being a bit more brave to step closer towards the producer chair. And as I said, yes, you know, before in the band, a lot of my creative music setups were very, you know, male dominated. It was just a bit more tricky for us to address that gender balance, because you have to be careful what you're asking your label for, what you're asking the management for. And again, there's that, you know, for me being the front woman of colour in the band, there's just this narrative running in the background, like, you're lucky to be here, so don't ask for too much. So they didn't even sometimes think that, like, I would be going into, I don't know, expected to write a massive hit, and it would just be like maybe six white guys and me. And no one ever thought to ask, you know, are you comfortable to go into this room with like these six kind of, you know, kind of alpha male type guys? And sometimes, and when you're doing that in America, that's a whole nother level as well. You really, it's not easy to assert yourself.
No, of course.
Just, there's just a lot of movies running in the background that you have to navigate yourself. So I just thought, you know what? I'm going to seek out more females for this record.
Yeah.
I sought out, you know, Rose Ohms. You know, she was, you know, amazingly on board. I sought out Karen Yame, and, you know, we did the, you know, the Carriers remix of Hey Hey, you know, a little kind of like, let's have fun with a record that was maybe associated with a slightly negative story. Let's turn that into a positive story now. You know, I sought out, you know, female engineers. In fact, the whole production on the Two Bold Diamond remix, not just the artist, but even the mastering engineer, Taylor, you know, she's based at Strongroom Studios in like Old Street, Curtain Road, them sides. She's female. You know, Jelly Cleaver, who mixed it, she's female. You know, you've got people like Faye Milton from Savages, and, you know, you've got, like, I was like, yeah, let's put all of these amazing women in a creative situation and see what happens. It's such a damn feeling.
Because women can do stuff too.
Yeah. So I just thought, okay, now, you know, now's the time that we can really push the boundaries, you know.
Well, especially as you're independent now, what's the point in just doing stuff you wouldn't stand behind? It doesn't make any sense, does it? Like, we've got enough songs about California to last us a lifetime, haven't we? Haven't we? How many of those have been written this week? Sorry, anyone out there who's just written a song about California, but Jesus Christ.
It's so true. And how many of them have been written by British white males as well? It's like, is there like a sort of, is there a debt or something that everyone's supposed to, we're not aware of?
I don't know. I don't know. It's never popped up in my mind to stick that in a lyric, to be honest, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful time. It's a beautiful time. And what's exciting you at the moment about being an independent artist, and how the world's ears have just taken on this yearning to listen to more just creative, like a wider spectrum of stuff. It's really amazing to have like people pop up now who are like your average music fans, who are like, oh my God, I can hear this in this song. Do you listen to, like, I don't know, like Odetta? Or, and I'm just like, wow, now I've got like real music fans schooling me and going, hey, Shingy, I've just listened to your record. Can I recommend you check out this beautiful, obscure record that was, you know, by a female folk artist from the 70s or 80s? That's amazing, you know?
Yeah, there's some great people around who know a lot more about music than me. The things that are exciting me are some very similar things to what you've been talking about. So with my new record, which will be out by the time this goes out, which is terrifying and wonderful all at once, because we're talking a few weeks beforehand, is that I was really excavating and I was really going deeper than I ever have into my past and into certain things in my past that have really held me back in my life for quite a long time, stuff from teenage years. And it's stuff I always kind of just sort of pushed to one side, pushed it all down.
Yeah.
Wrote about the things that were happening to me at the time, which I don't regret because I'm proud of my work. Mm-hmm. But then I just thought there are some things, I know that if I put words to these scary things and these things that make me sad a lot, then I think I can diminish the power of them in my life now, because it's stuff from when I was like 17.
I feel you.
That's a long time ago. I don't need to be bothered by that anymore. So it's a lot to do with letting go of some things, not letting people off the things they did, but just letting go of them so that I can be freer now. So for me, it was I know the word cathartic is used a lot in songwriting, but it was very, very cathartic.
Wow.
And like you, I think that kind of stuff, it sums stuff up for other people. It's not a selfish act to go, I feel sad about this, so I'm going to tell you. It's going, I feel sad about this and it's held me back for a long time, but I've done this to set myself free. Mm-hmm. And I think you could be set free also. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give that to you, is the sort of vibe of the record.
I just want to hug you right now.
Oh, let's do an air hug.
Virtual hug.
Oh, thanks. Which is why it's been frustrating. It's been very frustrating to be told that, for instance, on the radio at the moment, apparently, they don't really want too much downbeat stuff. So I've got a song called Black Car, which is about coronavirus, feeling guilty to survive it, really, because I think that's a mix. There's a whole mix of emotions. I'm obviously very thankful, but there's a lot of stuff going on in all of us at the moment, and we obviously processing it all in different ways. So I wrote this song because it just had to happen. And then I was quite nervous to share it with people because I didn't want to make them feel bad about stuff, because, you know, I didn't want to like bring them down. But then when I did share it with my sort of inner circle of fans, they were so pleased, and they said so many things about how it really helped them and stuff. So I just knew I could put it out. So I put it out as a single, and now I'm being told that even though it's the most appropriate time for that song to exist, no one's going to want to play it, even though it's like about right now. And that's the kind of shit that really pisses me off, because I've been independent for so long. I don't really like being told that sort of thing, because I just think it's bollocks. I know it's bollocks. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, it's kind of like dipping your toe into a game that, well, I'm dipping my toe into a game I don't fully understand, and maybe I shouldn't really even bother playing. So that's been frustrating. But again, it's not about that. It's about getting it to people who need it and want it and get value from it. So the rest of it doesn't really matter, but it is slightly frustrating. Have you felt that your records got support from the industry, inverted commas?
Yeah, that's really amazing you should say that, because like you said, it's like, right now, there is a clear demand on people platforms, social media. You know, people are asking for like emotive work. People aren't asking for fast food, and I just feel like it just makes the people who are peddling this idea that, you know, we've got to force feed the public upbeat song. Why do you want people to feel upbeat when actually a lot of those egalitarian taxpayer-funded institutions are supposed to reflect the spectrum of creativity, culture, reportage that people need? Why are you so scared to give people a range of emotions in the music that they're going to be downloading? And I just feel like it makes them look a bit sinister. You know, why do you want people to be pretending like nothing's going on and dancing? Yeah. Alone in the kitchen like they're in a club? Why do you want everybody to be turning their houses? There's this whole push, like they're like, yeah, kitchen disco Fridays, kitchen disco, oh, I love it, yes, we're now turning. And I'm just like, first of all, how many freaking average people in fucking England have kitchens that are fucking big enough to dance to? Like, A, that is such a fucking middle class, excuse my French, that's such a middle class assumption that everyone has these beautiful kitchens with islands in them, that, you know, you can
with a disco ball.
Your lovely kids that you can afford to raise in these big houses, and that there are gardens, and that, like, a lot of people in the areas that I grew up with, they have a balcony at most. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of friends and extended family who I came up with. And even now, a lot of middle-class Londoners can't afford more than a balcony. You know, a lot of 20, 30, 30-something-year-olds can't afford more than that. So the fact that they're trying to force this false kind of like, hey, we're so happy, I just find it a little bit, it makes them look a bit sinister. Like, why don't you want people to feel things? Because when people feel things, they're less likely to take bullshit because it reminds us of our humanity. And being reminded of your humanity reminds you of your responsibility and your power that you have when you get together as lots of good-minded human people. And I feel like there's something quite sinister in wanting people to just sort of block out the necessary emotions that we're supposed to be feeling now during this time. Yeah. Because then what you're going to have is a lot of post-traumatic, I mean, the mental health, as we said in the beginning of the chat, is creeping up. Suicide rates are up. And I've actually received messages going, I had so much despair. I've listened to your album and it's making me feel like I can go on. Songs that make people feel human make them, I don't know, it's like you said, it's like you've almost allowed people to feel something through your catharsis, you know, through your bravery in your music. And people want to feel things right now. They're tired of just, like, you can't be the BBC and give people nonstop negative news reporting about everything that's negative. 95% negative, and it's the same kind of psyop, fear, corona. Like, you can't just do that on the news and then be the BBC radio and then go, right, you've got to be fucking happy in your, of your island.
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah, well, you've put it so beautifully. Yeah. The kind of writing that I think that we both do is, I think, a lot about giving people permission to feel the feelings that they already feel.
Yeah.
The word fan is kind of awful because I think it reduces people to this kind of like a really anonymous thing. But the people who love the kind of music that comes out of humans that is true, let's say, mm-hmm. they are complicated people with lives of their own. Mm-hmm. They're not somebody who just clicks like on your photo. Mm-hmm. They've got loads of shit going on. They deserve to be seen. They deserve to be given permission to feel the things they feel. If we can help in the tiniest way, isn't that the most amazing part of it?
Yes.
And so that's why I just get frustrated when I feel like my music's being blocked from getting to people because of someone else's idea of what my music should be or who I should be signed to or how much money I should have paid to which plugger, you know, all that shit.
Oh my God, don't get me started on that.
I know, we could have a whole other hour about that. But I just want to get the music to the people. That is all I want. Yeah. Because I know, because it's helped me get over a load of shit, I know it will help people.
Yeah.
And that's not an arrogant thing. That's just a generous thing. Like I want to add value to the world through the music that I make.
Absolutely.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So stop stopping me.
so wonderfully put. And then also, like, with the whole format that we talked about, the fact that the setup is so negated where you have these levels of gatekeepers. Mm. I think if a lot of people found out, look, the only reason why that song is playing in your kitchen radio three times an hour is because that artist can afford a plugger. Basically, that radio station has been paid to say they like that song.
Yeah.
Are these presenters really DJs? Because a lot of them are influencers and they're just the person behind the mic. But it doesn't feel like they, like, there's no John Peels. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, where the fuck is John Peel? You know what I mean? Who is that person at mainstream radio that you are paying your taxes for that is, like, genuinely listening to hundreds of records and songs and really, you know?
There is one, which is Tom Robinson.
Oh!
Absolutely, Tom Robinson.
Oh, wow.
Because he's a freaking hero.
Is he at BBC6?
Yes.
Okay.
So he's there. There are some, I think. But I think your point absolutely stands by. We'll always stand up for Tom Robinson because he definitely listens to a shitload of stuff. Yeah.
No, I think it's important that the public know, like, you know, what the process is and, you know, like, who, I think the public need to know about the haves and the have-nots because, you know, if a lot of people knew that, you know, it was decided who they're supposed to be loving and listening to and dancing to in their mystery kitchens with islands, which most of us don't fucking have outside of Richmond, you know, or Richmond. That's because that artist has got a £10,000 promo budget. That's why you're getting to hear their voice. I think if a lot of people knew that, things would be different.
I think so too. One of the guests, I won't name the guest, but one of the guests of this podcast in the early days, he told me off the mic that the reason I'd heard of his band was because of £1 million being spent on that band when they started out.
Exactly.
And I still know of the band because they're great.
Yeah.
So they're a great band and they've really cultivated a great audience and all that stuff. But initially that was the push.
Wow.
And so when you see festival lineups, for instance, which is all blokes that you've heard of,
yeah,
and there's an uproar about, you know, really basic representation not being there,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's so, I'm kind of so annoyed, I can barely say it. But anyway, so that's happening. And then people go, oh, well, you know, if women and artists of colour and, you know, LGBTQIA plus artists could sell tickets, then they'd have slots. But what you're saying is you have to be so amazing that you can get really successful completely outside the system so that then we can put you on our bill and sell tickets and make money off you, which is not how it works.
No.
As you were saying with your experience at the label, if you'd had three times the budget, who knows how much bigger Noisettes could have been.
Exactly. Yeah, no, definitely. There's a lot of spend and mechanics. It's set, it's fixed. And I think, you know, there's a lot of sectors that have revealed themselves during this kind of revelatory, you know, year and a half that we've had. And I think that also the British public are kind of just trying to process that as well. Because like, even though now probably at least 50% of us know, you know, where certain parts of sectors are fixed, we know that we can't just throw out those institutions overnight. You know, a lot of us are trying to give them a chance to change, or suddenly money's being appearing to give said institutions more money, you know, because they're like, well, yes, we need help to be equal, you know. You know, if we're grasping for BBC, we're actually going to need more taxpayers' money so we can have an equality fund so that we can get more. You know, it's just like,
what, than being not a shithead fund? Jesus.
Let's give them money.
Right. Or you could just be a decent person in the first place. I don't know. It seems a little bit more simple to me.
Yeah, so I think the word is out now, and I think that people know that there's a lot of malpractice and just a lot of, you know, the format is very, very rigged. Just a matter of, I think, you know, maybe us not as independent artists trying to sit there waiting for validation from those institutions.
Exactly.
And actually coming together and actually becoming, to, as you said, we're almost becoming more powerful than those institutions, because a lot of the artists who are backed by those institutions can't reach a genuine segment of the British public who will stay.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah,
we are in a position to do that and support each other. And we should carry on. There's loads of amazing, you know, bodies that are in support where you've got your AIMS, you know, institutions like that, you know, where you don't have to have the, you know, the usual kind of situation to be able to make it. So, yeah, I think it's a really amazing time for truly independent, you know, artists, companies, souls, and for artists that are really singing, as we said earlier, from like an authentic place, regardless of what they've been told people want to hear. People just want to hear good music. Like when these mass subscribers, you know, subscribe to hear music, I think at the end of the day, people just really do want to hear amazing music, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this is something that we're able to provide in our position.
Yeah.
It just takes a lot more work, and, you know, we don't have the resources, but there's something quite raw and quite precious and genuine that we do have. And that's, you know, the proof is in the pudding of our records, hopefully.
Well, that's a beautiful way to end our chat. But I just want to say, when I saw you in your video cycling and playing the guitar at the same time, I just thought that's like a metaphor for, I suppose, detaching from that idea that the industry has to pat me on the back one day and go, yeah, you did well, we ignored you, we didn't help, but you finally proved that you can do it to us. Because sometimes I feel like, what else do I have to do to prove to the world, inverted commas, how blah, blah, blah I am?
Definitely.
And I just saw you on that fucking bike. I was like, that's what I feel like I'm doing every day.
Definitely.
And they're still never going to applaud me, and it's still fine, because there's much more, to life.
I think, you know, rather than like that mass round of applause, what you're getting now is you're getting the genuine ripple of the of wonderful, genuine voices in the choir who are listening to you for who you really are. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I think we need to just carry on, celebrate each other, amplify each other. And, you know, more will come to the party. And whenever, you know, what happens is, like you said, you can't win them all, but when you do win, you know, just that critical mass, they have got your back, man. Like, yeah. They're amazing and they really do have your back, you know. And at the end of the day, I think that's the creative community and the creative consumer community that I'd rather be a part of anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Well, look, it's been so wonderful to meet you. I when we started talking, I felt like we met already, but we definitely haven't. But I've been, you know, a big fan of your work for years. And that album, the new album's amazing. All the other stuff's great. I normally ask people which three pieces of their own work would they recommend. I mean, you feel free to do that, but I would just say people need to go and listen to Too Bold immediately. What do you think?
Too Bold Diamond Remix for sure. I would also suggest Atticus is always a go-to for me. Like, there's always a song like that on one of my albums. That's like the kind of quintessential, like, I love production and I love dynamics in music, but there's also something really lovely about when you can find a moment on your album when you strip it back a little bit, you know, and you kind of get into that lullaby type vibe. So yeah, I guess Too Bold has that Atticus moment for me. You know, let me know what the other songs that are resonating, I guess. And I'm going to listen to yours as well. I'm looking forward.
I'll send you a sneaky link to it.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to listen to
you're welcome.
Today then.
Lovely. Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
And you should pop round sometime.
Yeah. Well, our drummer, like, Tobbs is moving to Bristol, I think. Like.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we're definitely going to go down and hang out, bless that house, kick out some jams, and then do a little Bristol round to come and say hi.
Yay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you so much for being on this.
Thank you so much, Laura.
The deluxe show notes page for this episode is at penfriend.rocks/Shingai, Shingai. Head on over to get links to listen to Too Bold and watch that amazing video where Shingai rides a bike and plays the guitar at the same time. Astonishing. My new album, Exotic Monsters, is also out now, wherever you get your music. But the very best way to support this independent artist is to get it direct from my website in all its limited edition vinyl and CD glory. Everything is running low now, and I've got just a handful of t-shirts and badges left too. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, click subscribe, and say hello anytime on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. I'm at PenFriendRocks everywhere. Bonus points if you feel inspired to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps in two ways. It tells me to keep going, and it tells others to keep listening. Thank you. If you're new here, please make sure you visit my website penfriend.rocks to pick up two free songs and receive thoughtful letters about art and music. And if you'd like to listen to more after this, I highly recommend episode 39 with Stephen Jones, episode 36 with Sananda Maitreya, formerly known as Terence Trent D'Arby, and there's also a Getting to Know Me episode, which is episode 40. This podcast is a rare ad-free zone, but I do welcome sponsorship from listeners. So if you'd like to find out more about that, go to penfriend.rocks/podcast and click sponsor. Massive, massive thanks always to my Correspondence Club for powering the making of this show and all my music. Lots of love to you. Thanks so much for listening today. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time to share my conversation with Lou Barlow of Sebado and Dinosaur Jr. So I hope to catch you then. Till then, take care.